Državni izpitni center. Splošna matura 2019. Lepo pozdravljeni. Pričenja se reševanje izpitne pole slušnega razumevanja angleščine. Izpitna pola je sestavljena iz dveh delov, dela A in dela B. Vsak del vsebuje govorjeno izhodiščno besedilo in nalogo, ki se nanj nanaša. Najprej boste nalogo prebrali in jo nato med poslušanjem besedila sproti reševali. Vsako besedilo boste poslušali po dvakrat. Začetek in konec besedila bo označeval takle zvočni znak. Rešitve pišite z nalivnim peresom ali s kemičnim svinčnikom v izpitno polo v zato predvideni prostor znotraj okvirja. Pišite čitljivo in skladno s pravopisnimi pravili. Če se zmotite, napisano prečrtajte in rešitev zapišite na novo. Nečitljivi zapisi in nejasni popravki bodo ocenjeni z nič točkami. Zaupajte vase in v svoje zmožnosti. Želimo vam veliko uspeha. Poslušajte pozorno. Odprite izpitno polo.
Section A. You will hear a recording about Joe Malone, a beautician. You will hear the recording twice. Now read the task.
So Jo Malone is, well, she's the Queen of Smells. Are you okay with that, Jo?
Yeah, I kind of love that title.
The Princess of Pongs. We could go on forever. Hugely successful entrepreneur. The Jo Malone company, her company, was sold to Estee Lauder back in 1999 for, and this is quite tantalising, Jo, the sum of undisclosed millions.
Still undisclosed, yeah.
Never will be.
No.
Okay. You actually carried on working for the company. That's important. For how many years after you sold it?
For 5 years.
Right.
So I carried on and I then, 2 years into, well, when I sold the business, I thought I was going to stay there forever.
Yeah.
And then 2 years into it, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. So I had to fight that for a year. And then I came back from that and felt very differently about life, family, business. And so I made that life-changing decision to leave.
And now you've got a different company, Jo Loves.
I started again. I was too bored and I was driving everyone absolutely crazy.
Well, we'll talk about that in a moment. But people will be fascinated by you and your background. And I suppose I made the lazy assumption that you'd not made money, but probably come from it. You set up a swanky shop in a swanky part of London with a load of family money and hey presto. But it wasn't like that. So first of all, I think people will be hugely interested in the fact that you left school with what sort of qualifications?
Zero. So I don't have
anything.
I don't have, literally, I didn't do GCSEs, CSEs. I think the only qualification I had was a brownie when I was in the brownies, which was, and then I got thrown out the brownies for doing something terrible. So I grew up in a two up, two down on a council estate in Bexley Heath, and I was really the adult in our family from the age of 11, 12. And
why was that?
Because, well, I had very creative parents and amazing parents.
Entrepreneurial?
My father was an artist and a magician and a gambler, and my mum was in the beauty industry. But, you know, both of them were out working, so it was up to me in the house to look after my sister, who was 5 years younger than me, and make sure the house ran.
And you, your mum was a beautician, so she was in the same sort of line of work, if you like.
Yeah, she worked for a woman called... She started off as a manicurist for Revlon, by the way, and she worked... She was a very hard-working woman. She worked her way up, and she went to work for a woman called the Countess Labotti, who I spent a lot of my young childhood with, and that's really how the adventure and beauty began.
Right, she sounds fabulously
exotic.
She's
wonderful.
Tell me about her.
Oh, she was just so amazing. I think in a movie, if anyone was going to play her, it would be like Helen Mirren. She was very tall, blonde, shot blonde hair, blood red lipstick. She wore fishnet tights. She was in her 80s, very high heels, big white lab coat. And she was one of those really romantic characters that bring life to life, if you know what I mean.
Now you will hear the recording again.
So Jo Malone is, she's the Queen of Smells. Are you okay with that, Jo?
Yeah, I kind of love that title.
The Princess of Pongs. We could go on forever. Hugely successful entrepreneur. The Jo Malone company, her company, was sold to Estee Lauder back in 1999 for, and this is quite tantalising, Jo, the sum of undisclosed millions.
Still undisclosed, yeah.
Never will be.
No.
Okay. You actually carried on working for the company. That's important. For how many years after you sold it?
For 5 years.
Right.
So I carried on and I then, 2 years into, well, when I sold the business, I thought I was going to stay there forever.
Yeah.
And then 2 years into it, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. So I had to fight that for a year. And then I came back from that and felt very differently about life, family, business. And so I made that life-changing decision to leave.
And now you've got a different company, Jo Loves.
I started again. I was too bored and I was driving everyone absolutely crazy.
Well, we'll talk about that in a moment. But people will be fascinated by you and your background. And I suppose I made the lazy assumption that you'd not made money, but probably come from it. You set up a swanky shop in a swanky part of London with a load of family money and hey presto. But it wasn't like that. So first of all, I think people will be hugely interested in the fact that you left school with what sort of qualifications?
Zero. So I don't have
anything.
I don't have, literally, I didn't do GCSEs, CSEs. I think the only qualification I had was a brownie when I was in the brownies, which was, and then I got thrown out the brownies for doing something terrible. So I grew up in a two up, two down on a council estate in Bexley Heath, and I was really the adult in our family from the age of 11, 12. And
why was that?
Because, well, I had very creative parents and amazing parents.
Entrepreneurial?
My father was an artist and a magician and a gambler, and my mum was in the beauty industry. But, you know, both of them were out working, so it was up to me in the house to look after my sister, who was 5 years younger than me, and make sure the house ran.
And your mum was a beautician, so she was in the same sort of line of work, if you like.
Yeah, she worked for a woman called... She started off as a manicurist for Revlon, by the way. And she was a very hard-working woman. She worked her way up. And she went to work for a woman called the Countess Labotti, who I spent a lot of my young childhood with. And that's really how the adventure in beauty began.
Right, she sounds fabulously
exotic.
She's
wonderful.
Tell me about her.
Oh, she was just so amazing. I think in a movie, if anyone was going to play her, it would be like Helen Mirren. She was very tall, blonde, shot blonde hair, blood red lipstick. She wore fishnet tights. She was in her 80s, very high heels, big white lab coat. And she was one of those really romantic characters that bring life to life, if you know what I mean.
This is the end of Section A. Section B. You will hear an interview with Zachariah Fike, a war hero. You will hear the recording twice. Now read the task.
Meet Zachariah Fike, a major in the US Army whose passion is returning lost war medals to their rightful owners. It all started when Zachariah came back from a tour of Iraq in 2006.
Whenever troops go to war, they come back different people, whether they want to admit it or not. you've seen some really good things and you've seen some really bad things. And everyone deals with those stresses differently. For me, I needed to find a hobby that interests me. And I found that through collecting antiques. I enjoyed the thrill of searching for that lost treasure. And as I started to venture into those shops, I started seeing discarded military items, helmets, uniforms, medals, and it bothered me to see these items just kind of laying around. And I started to rescue them and became a military collector.
And at some point, your mum, recognizing your interest in these things, bought you a Purple Heart, which is the medal awarded to wounded soldiers. How did you react to getting that present?
I knew it didn't belong to me. It was one of those items that shouldn't be collected, and set me on a journey to find out everything I could about the soldier.
When you say it shouldn't be collected, what do you mean?
It symbolizes an individual who's shed their blood or their life for a purpose, for a cause, for their country. And to me, that's a symbol that shouldn't be in somebody's personal collection. It shouldn't be on display in someone's house. It should be with that family or in a place of honor, let's say a museum or a town hall where thousands of people can come and appreciate that sacrifice through that symbol of a medal.
What does a Purple Heart medal look like?
It's in the shape of a heart, purple in color, and affixed to the front is the bust of General George Washington. If you turn that medal over, it's inscribed for military merit.
Does it always have the name of the person who was awarded that medal on the back, or is that sort of only an occasional thing?
It's an occasional thing. Typically, engravings are reserved for posthumous medals, so those soldiers who were killed. The tradition started in World War II, but even today, when soldiers are lost on the field of battle, the government will engrave their name on the back and present those to the family.
Mm. But the one your mum gave, you did have someone's name on the back, is that right?
Yes, ma'am. It was a posthumous medal, and it was a local boy in New York, Corrado Piccoli, who was killed in World War II.
So when you saw his name, did you just think, right, I'm going to find his family?
At first, I wanted to know everything about him. So I simply started to research him online and was completely amazed that I found absolutely nothing. Mm. We as a country have forgotten about some of these men and women who have died for our country in the sense that we never told their story. He was simply a name on an honor roll, and that was it. There was no photo, there was no backstory, and that set a nerve, and I wanted to find out everything I could about him and piece together that life.
But then you got deployed to Afghanistan yourself, and that interrupted your search, and you were wounded in Afghanistan and got your own Purple Heart medal. What happened to you there?
I was wounded September 11th of 2010, of all days, 3:30 in the morning, a 107-millimeter Katyusha rocket happened to land in the room I was sleeping in, and I'm very lucky to walk out of that room.
How did you feel about getting your own Purple Heart?
To be completely honest with you, I struggled to accept it. I felt that my wounds weren't as significant as some of the other soldiers that I seen that year. 2010 was the deadliest year of the war.
Now you will hear the recording again.
Meet Zachariah Fike, a major in the US Army whose passion is returning lost war medals to their rightful owners. It all started when Zachariah came back from a tour of Iraq in 2006.
Whenever troops go to war, they come back different people, whether they want to admit it or not. You've seen some really good things and you've seen some really bad things. And everyone deals with those stresses differently. For me, I needed to find a hobby that interests me, and I found that through collecting antiques. I enjoyed the thrill of searching for that lost treasure, and as I started to venture into those shops, I started seeing discarded military items, helmets, uniforms, medals, and it bothered me to see these items just kind of laying around, and I started to rescue them and became a military collector.
And at some point, your mum, recognizing your interest in these things, bought you a Purple Heart, which is the medal awarded to wounded soldiers. How did you react to getting that present?
I knew it didn't belong to me. It was one of those items that shouldn't be collected, and it set me on a journey to find out everything I could about the soldier.
When you say it shouldn't be collected, what do you mean?
It symbolizes an individual who's shed their blood or their life for a purpose, for a cause, for their country. And to me, that's a symbol that shouldn't be in somebody's personal collection. It shouldn't be on display in someone's house. It should be with that family or in a place of honor, let's say a museum or a town hall where thousands of people can come and appreciate that sacrifice through that symbol of a medal.
What does a Purple Heart medal look like?
It's in the shape of a heart, purple in color, and affixed to the front is the bust of General George Washington. If you turn that medal over, it's inscribed for military merit.
Does it always have the name of the person who was awarded that medal on the back, or is that sort of only an occasional thing?
It's an occasional thing. Typically, engravings are reserved for posthumous medals, so those soldiers who were killed. The tradition started in World War II, but even today, when soldiers are lost on the field of battle, the government will engrave their name on the back and present those to the family.
Mm. But the one your mum gave, you did have someone's name on the back, is that right?
Yes, ma'am. It was a posthumous medal, and it was a local boy in New York, Corrado Piccoli, who was killed in World War II.
So when you saw his name, did you just think, right, I'm going to find his family?
At first, I wanted to know everything about him. So I simply started to research him online and was completely amazed that I found absolutely nothing. Mm. We as a country have forgotten about some of these men and women who have died for our country in the sense that we never told their story. He was simply a name on an honor roll, and that was it. There was no photo, there was no backstory, and that set a nerve, and I wanted to find out everything I could about him and piece together that life.
But then you got deployed to Afghanistan yourself, and that interrupted your search, and you were wounded in Afghanistan and got your own Purple Heart medal. What happened to you there?
I was wounded September 11th of 2010, of all days, 3:30 in the morning, a 107-millimeter Katyusha rocket happened to land in the room I was sleeping in, and I'm very lucky to walk out of that room.
How did you feel about getting your own Purple Heart?
To be completely honest with you, I struggled to accept it. I felt that my wounds weren't as significant as some of the other soldiers that I seen that year. 2010 was the deadliest year of the war.
This is the end of Section B.
Končuje se slušno preverjanje angleščine. Nehajte pisati, zaprite izpitno polo in jo položite na rob mize. Nasvidenje in srečno!